different than I thought you should know. This old building was once a factory. We made Stetsons, your grandpa and me. It wasn't easy, but at least life was going down. There used to be a city in this town. Rusted rail yard had a hotel and a couple of stores. We had good times here between the wars. Wasn't paradise, but there was music in the street. Right there's where your grandparents first had a chance to meet. They got married in that church. I can still see that wedding gown. There used to be a city in this town. Change came, it started one by one. First the layoffs, then the factory was gone. Then came the highways, suburbs and Walmart. That was the final blow that tore this place apart. But it seems like just last year, when there were people all around, there used to be a city in this town. Census says there's people here, but I think someone's confused. Just look out at these sidewalks, they're not being used. You know when a city dies, it doesn't die with grace. It just becomes a ruin, shouting this was once a place. I guess it's time to leave, but I don't know where I'd be bound. There used to be a city in this town. To be a city in this town. There used to be a city in this town.
Welcome to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Today's program starts out with, should the U.S. break up the big banks to prevent the collapse of the global financial system? In 2008, the U.S. Treasury committed $245 billion in taxpayer dollars to stabilize America's banking institutions. Banks that were once too big to fail have only grown bigger. Was size and complexity at the root of the financial crisis, or do calls to break up the banks ignore real benefits that only economies of scale can pass on to customers and investors? The debaters are Richard Fisher, Simon Johnson, Douglas Elliott, and Paul Saltzman. And then after that, a segment on Obama's grand climate plan. President Obama has laid out a plan to reduce U.S. carbon dioxide emissions from sources like power plants and expand the use of renewables and natural gas. Steve Curwood gets a reaction from David Hawkins, Director of Climate Progress at NRDC, and Sierra Club's Executive Director, Michael Bruin, and a student activist.
Four letters of the alphabet, TBTF. Acronymically, it's Washington and Wall Street shorthand for too big to fail. And it's the concept that justified taxpayers having to bail out banks in trouble in the financial crisis, because the thinking goes that if one of these really big banks goes down, it could take everything else in the economic system with it. Solution, how about breaking up the big banks? Drastic, right? But would that actually solve the problem? Would we be safe from the threat of TBTF if we broke up the big banks? Well, that sounds like the makings of a great debate, so let's have it. Yes or no to this statement? Break up the big banks. A debate from Intelligence Squared US. I'm John Donvan. We are at the Kaufman Music Center in New York City, and we are in partnership with the Richmond Paul Richmond Center for Business Law and Public Policy, a joint venture of Columbia Business School and Columbia Law School. As always, we have four superbly qualified debaters, two against two, on the motion, break up the big banks. And as always, we go in three rounds, and then the live audience audience here votes to pick the winner, and only one side wins. And now let's meet the team arguing for the motion. First, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Richard Fisher. And Richard, you are the president and CEO of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, a bank that Texas Monthly profiled and described, in which it described Dallas Fed's, quote, long tradition of being a pain in the, and a word beginning with A, and how you are perhaps the most visible in a long line of dissidents from the bank, often in disagreement with Fed policy. So our question to you is, in the ranking of Fed policy makers, how much of a pain in the neck are you?
Well, first, thanks for getting it anatomically correct. Of course, I'm a member of a team. We're just trying to get it right. We're trying to conduct monetary policy and regulatory policy in order to promote the greatest economic employment growth without creating inflation. And this is an issue that's dear to our heart.
Ladies and gentlemen, Richard Fisher. And Richard, your partner is?
My partner, Simon Johnson, not only the former chief economist for the International Monetary Fund, is also a brilliant professor at MIT of entrepreneurialism and has a great British accent.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's hear it from Simon Johnson. And Simon, as former chief economist at the IMF, you spent a lot of your career working on crisis prevention and growth issues in emerging markets, after which you said that while each crisis is different, they all look depressingly similar, including the crisis in the U.S. So what is the common denominator?
Oligarchs. Rich, powerful people who get out of control, and they want you to bail them out again.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, Simon Johnson. Our motion is break up the big banks, and we have two debaters here to argue against this motion. First, ladies and gentlemen, welcome Doug Elliott. Doug, you are a fellow in economic studies at the Brookings Institution. You were in investment banking for 20 years, most of it at J.P. Morgan. At one point, you left banking and started up a nonprofit which was called the Center on Federal Financial Institutions. After that, you went back to banking, back to J.P. Morgan, in 2006, just in time for the financial crisis, which says what about timing?
It says I was broke. I was a volunteer think tanker. I needed to go back to Wall Street so I could support my think tank habit.
Ladies and gentlemen, Doug Elliott. And Doug, your partner is?
The brilliant Paul Saltzman. He runs the Clearinghouse Association, which analyzes these issues, and he has a very nice Brooklyn accent.
Ladies and gentlemen, Paul Saltzman. And Paul, as Doug mentioned, you're president of the Clearinghouse Association, where a while back you ran a sort of war game to test federal legislation that was put in place to manage banks called Dodd-Frank. We'll be hearing a lot about it. And it simulated a bank meltdown. And you had people playing bankers and congressmen and journalists, et cetera, FDIC folks. So I really want to know, was your version of Congress more functional than the one that we have now?
Well, no, our version of Congress functioned as well as the current Congress. So I think it was very realistic, and we had a number of folks who were in that field playing that, and they were as fractious as today's current Congress.
So was it a disaster?
Yes.
Yep, great. Ladies and gentlemen, Paul Saltzman. So our motion is this: break up the big banks. On to round one, opening statements from each of our debaters in turn. Speaking first for the motion, break up the big banks, Richard Fisher. He is the president and chief executive officer of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. Ladies and gentlemen, Richard Fisher.
Thank you. 0.2% of all the banks in the United States of America control 70% of the banking assets of the country. One of them, J.P. Morgan, has assets that exceed the total assets of 5,400 community banks in this country. Our definition of a bank too big to fail is a bank whose bondholders and shareholders and managers and big customers believe themselves exempt from the rules and the consequences that apply to all others. If they screw up, they'll be bailed out by you. It happened in 2008, 2010. You know that. And then a law called Dodd-Frank was passed by Congress to prevent it from ever happening again. And yet today, these banks are bigger and the power more concentrated than ever. The mechanics to corral them are more politicized than ever. And even worse, Dodd-Frank shackled smaller banks with over 13,000 pages of rules and regulations. This places the smaller banks that wish to compete with the big banks at a tremendous competitive disadvantage. They don't have the resources to hire lawyers and handsome, well-heeled, Brooklyn-accented lobbyists like Paul Saltzman to work the regulators. Under the law, the big banks are now designated as systematically important financial institutions. The acronym for that is SIFIs. And actually, when you think about it, SIFI sounds like a communicable disease. something that's transmitted by risky behavior. And indeed, thank you. Indeed, it was the TBTFs, or the SIFIs, who were, if not the cause of, they were the spreaders of the economic virus that nearly destroyed our economy. The SIFIs, the too big to fails, are a dagger pointed directly at the heart of the American economy. Now, Mr. Saltzman and others are very fond of pointing out what they consider to be myths. One is that there's greater banking concentration in Canada than in the United States, greater concentration in France than in the United States. That's great if you like Gordon Lightfoot, or if you're French. Or they will point out that there are other industries that have a greater concentration, for example, computers or telecoms. That's true. But these are companies that are not shielded from failure like banks are. The big banks, in summary, have taken what I call the immoral high ground. Government policy has led them there, and it has enshrined them. We need to correct this perversion of American capitalism. So I ask you to vote yes to the proposition before this House. Let us break up the big banks that are considered too big to fail. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Steve Lerman. I'm the guy that produces, edits, narrates, and promotes great speeches and interviews. I'm the guy responsible for airing in-depth interviews, speeches, and even debates on controversial subjects such as war and peace and climate change and the economy. I hope you like listening to it as much as I like producing it. Access Sacramento broadcasts it on the internet every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. And you can find the podcast at greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com as well as at Facebook.
Bin Laden was George Sr.'s clan not so long ago. Set George up with a retirement plan, lots of low-tax dough. Go down White House, way down in payoff land. Tell the CIA, leave the Saudis alone. There's oil and gas in Uzbekistan. Oil and gas must flow. So we depose the Taliban. Where'd Osama go? Bend down, Congress. Kneel down and lend a hand. Tell the people liberty must go. There's more to gain in war than peace. Let the weapons flow. Destabilize the Middle East. Enrich the CEO. Go down, brother, way down on Florida sand. Tell the justices not to let my people vote. The VP had a heart attack, oily blood, you know. While he's still here, let's bomb Iraq. Give the rubes a show. Lie down, people. Lay down your Bill of Rights. Tell James Madison we had to let those amendments go. The opium crop was blown away. Let them poppies grow. Thanks to U.S. troops, it's back today. Only goes to show. Go down Wall Street. Sell off my shares today. Tell my broker, put it all in blow.
And now back to, should the U.S. break up the big banks?
Our motion is break up the big banks, and here to speak against this motion, I'd like to introduce Paul Saltzman. He is president of the Clearinghouse Association, a trade group that represents 18 of the world's largest banks. Ladies and gentlemen, Paul Saltzman.
Thank you, John. 7 years after the subprime mortgage crisis, one thing is clear. Many people made serious mistakes. public officials, regulators, and yes, Simon and Richard, large banks. Mistakes that we now know with the benefit of hindsight helped bring about the crisis. But in the 3 years since the passage of the Dodd-Frank Financial Reform Act, there has been an intense focus on strengthening our banking system. There are new rules and supervisory practices that are changing both the culture and the structure of large banks in permanent and transformational ways to ensure that a crisis like the one we experienced never happens again. But my opponents ignore or understate these reforms. Instead, they propose a radical, untested, and practically unworkable experiment that would upend the progress that we've made and create a whole host of new systemic crises. Smaller banks are inherently safer. That is their underlying assumption. And they are selling you the solution as a risk-free proposition without any cost to society. Yes, we can have all the benefits of large banks, but we don't need the large banks. I'm afraid, Simon and Richard, you just can't have it both ways. Their solution is naive and nostalgic. Look, the strength of our banking system is its diversity. We need banks of all sizes, shapes, and functions. And yes, within that mosaic, some banks are large. But some of these banks are large for a simple reason. They mirror the size and the scope of the economy that they serve. They are scaled to serve the customers and the companies that voluntarily use their services. Large banks provide a unique set of services, global distribution channels, innovative technologies that only they can produce because of the economies of size, scope, and scale at cheaper prices for American consumers. Some of these benefits are visible, like mobile payment technologies and reward points. Some are very much behind the scenes, like fraud protection and massive investment for our global infrastructure, clearance, settlement, and payment systems. And large banks spend tens of billions of dollars protecting this critical market infrastructure from dangerous cyber attacks that small banks could not afford to pay. The underlying premise of my opponent's theory is that smaller banks are somehow safer and less complex. That is a faulty assumption that is simply belied by the facts of history. Banking crises are caused by one thing. When too many people buy an overinflated asset, you have what's called a common shock. A common shock associated with too many people buying the same overvalued asset. And when that asset bubble bursts, you have a systemic crisis. My point is, smaller institutions can be a source of systemic risk. Breaking up the banks will not prevent a future crisis, and also they would eliminate the stabilizing impact that large and well-diversified banks have during times of inevitable crises. And there has been tremendous progress in the pace and substance of regulatory reforms to mitigate the risks to our banking system. There isn't a single aspect of a bank's business that hasn't undergone reform or been untouched by regulatory reform. To suggest that these changes are illusory is just simply wrong.
I'm John Donvan, and you're listening to Intelligence Squared U.S., Oxford-style debating on America's shores. Stay with us.
And here's where we are. We are halfway through the opening round of this Intelligence Squared U.S. debate. I'm John Donvan. We have four debaters, two teams of two, fighting it out over this motion, break up the big banks. You have heard two of the opening statements, and now on to the third. Arguing for the motion, break up the big banks, Simon Johnson. He is the Ronald A. Kurtz Professor of Entrepreneurship at MIT Sloan School of Management and former chief economist at the International Monetary Fund. Ladies and gentlemen, Simon Johnson.
Now, Richard Fisher has laid out for you the case, the economic case, the technical case for breaking up the big banks. My job today is to tell you the things that Richard Fisher can't tell you because he's too nice a guy and too much of a diplomat. And I want to come at these precisely by responding to what Paul Saltzman has just said on three main dimensions. I want to talk about the magic, supposed magic of banking. I want to talk about J.P. Morgan Chase. And I want to talk about Dodd-Frank, the legislation, the miracle that Mr. Saltzman says has fixed all our problems. On the first point, on the magic of big banks, have you felt it? Have you seen around you as the banks became bigger, the great improvement in customer service, the reduction in fees, the better access to credit for all Americans? No, you have not. You have not. And the really interesting point is the history. When did the banks in the United States become so big? It's mostly in the last 15 years. Mid-1990s, the largest six banks in the United States had total assets around 15%, 15% of U.S. GDP. They're now over 60% of GDP combined. They're bigger now than they were before the crisis. This is a recent development. Everyone in this room, everyone listening, should have felt the magic. If there were any magic for you, there isn't. Let me talk about JP Morgan Chase. What is the balance sheet measured properly, if you include all the derivative exposure using international accounting standards? It's a $4 trillion bank. It's about a quarter the size of the U.S. economy. I'm comparing the balance sheet with our annual GDP. That's a big bank. If JP Morgan were on the verge of failure today, $4 trillion is going down. It's a hypothetical. Please don't rush to tweet that. It's hypothetical. JP Morgan is about to fail. Who here thinks that the president, Secretary of the Treasury, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, would let them go? Does anyone think JP Morgan could fail, just like every other business outside of big banks could fail in America? Could JP Morgan fail? Anyone want to raise their hand? Goldman Sachs was a $1.1 trillion bank when it failed. I'm sorry, was rescued with liquidity loans. I always get those two things mixed up. In September 2008, $1.1 trillion bank. That was up from $250 billion in the mid-1990s, when it was one of the best banks in the world, when it provided really good service to individuals and corporate customers. Anyone think Goldman Sachs could fail? No, I see no hands. One hand. There's a short seller in every New York audience. Dodd-Frank, Mr. Saltzman says, Dodd-Frank has solved this problem. Now, I'm a supporter of Dodd-Frank. I think this is important legislation. We had to get some of these reforms done. I worked to help FDIC, Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, with their implementation of some of the plans for how you manage the collapse of these banks. You know, maybe it'll work. Maybe the Federal Reserve will insist on preparing these banks properly so when the day comes, the damage is more to the management who are responsible and to the creditors who should be on the hook, and to their shareholders who took the risk, rather than on the rest of us, rather than on the economy, rather than on everyone who lost a job. Maybe we can avert that danger. Maybe Dodd-Frank will work and all these pieces will come together. I would not bet on it. I do not advise you to bet on it. I advise you not to take risk out of the world. You can't do that. We have no magic bullets. But as a matter of responsible action, and as a matter of reducing the risks that we will face, I urge you today, support the motion put forward by Richard Fisher and me. Break up the big banks. Thank you very much.
And that's our motion, break up the big banks. And here is our final debater speaking against the motion, Douglas Elliott. Doug Elliott is a fellow in economic studies at the Brookings Institution and a former investment banker. Ladies and gentlemen, Doug Elliott.
I strongly believe it would be a big mistake to forcibly break up the largest American banks. I oppose breaking them up for three main reasons. First, we need some very large, complex banks in America to cost-effectively help our businesses and families deal with a large, complex world. Without them, loans and other services will be more expensive and harder to get. Second, breaking up the big banks is unlikely to make us safer, despite the assertions of Richard and Simon. Third, the process of breaking the banks up would almost certainly cut bank lending for a number of years at a time when our economy needs more lending, not less. And this isn't just my opinion. The Business Roundtable did a survey of CEOs of major U.S. companies, and they very strongly supported the need for banks of this nature. Now, Richard has his Federal Reserve Bank in Dallas, which does some nice research for him. But I'm sorry, Richard, I happen to be more impressed by research papers from two other Federal Reserve banks in St. Louis and in Philadelphia that have shown quite considerable benefits of this kind of size and scope.
Hello, I'm George W. Bush, the President of the United States. But on a more serious note, I'm sure you've heard that recently we have found weapons of mass destruction among the axis of evildoers somewhere between here and somewhere else. But right now, Vice President Cheney is going to help me out with my weekly geography briefing, all right? Now, Dick, don't give me any hints. I think I got this one, all right? There's a country outside the U.S. that has caused quite a stir. Korea, 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 Korea. Now I know that it's important that I say the word nuclear, not nuclear. Korea.
Korea, Korea, Korea. Korea, Korea.
Korea. We've learned there are nukes in Korea. Before opening my mouth, is it the North or South that's bad?
Korea, look on the map for North Korea.
I will keep them in check.
You're pointing to Quebec.
My bad, Eureka. Here's a plan to show I'm no moron. I'll just get Iraq to declare war on Korea. How's that for a brilliant idea?
The evil Axis is back with Iran and Streisand and Sean Penn.
Sean Penn, Sean Penn, I know that name. Isn't that the capital of
Korea?
And now for something completely different.